This is Maryland Viewpoints, an in-depth discussion of the events and issues impacting our state. Now, from the studios of the Maryland News Network, this is Maryland Viewpoints with Meredith Marks.
Welcome to Maryland Viewpoints. I'm Meredith Marks, and this week we are chatting with Kerry Graves, Executive Director of NAMI Metropolitan Baltimore. And NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, the nation's largest grassroots mental health organization. And NAMI provides advocacy, education, support, and public awareness so that all individuals and families affected by mental illness can build better lives. Hey, Kerry, welcome aboard.
Hi, thank you so much.
Well, it's good to have you here. This is a very important topic to discuss as it does affect most people. Whether somebody has mental illness, if you don't, you usually know somebody that has it or you're affected by it in some way. Do you think that's a fair statement?
Absolutely.
Tell me a little bit about your position with NAMI.
Sure. So I am the executive director of NAMI Metropolitan Baltimore. We are a NAMI affiliate that is serving Baltimore City and County. We are dedicated grassroots leaders working together to raise awareness and education, advocacy, support group programs, both for people living with mental illness and their loved ones. In my role, I ensure that NAMI's mission is met, that we achieve our programmatic goals, that I manage the day-to-day operations and staff, and we have over 270 dedicated volunteers in the community, which is really important for me to note. We are largely volunteer-run, and we would not be able to do our programs and services without our dedicated volunteers. Those volunteers go through a training process to become volunteers with us. Many of them are either living with a mental health condition themselves or are caregiving for someone with a mental health condition. And so really the premise of NAMI is that we live by, or we lead by lived experience. We know because we've been there ourselves. And so our volunteers are the backbone of this organization and very important to our mission.
That's really interesting that you bring that up, that most of these volunteers either have a mental illness or take care of someone with a mental illness. Do you think that that really helps with them volunteering with this particular organization because they kind of live it and breathe it every day?
Absolutely. I think it is twofold. I think that they are able to teach from experience. So, we provide support groups as well as classes, educational classes, and those support groups and classes are led by those volunteers. Wow. And additionally, the presentations that we give out in the community also led by those volunteers. And often mental illness, because it's not a visible condition, it's not a physical condition, you're not seeing it, you're not able to just look at someone for the most part and say, oh, they've got a mental health condition. And so trying to put a face to mental illness is very important. Trying to normalize it and show that they look just like you or I, it helps others on their road to recovery. And so when someone is able to get up in front of a group and say, I was where you are right now, and I am now in recovery, that's a powerful message and has such an impact on the other individual's road to recovery. And so it is important. It is also important for our volunteers. I have never worked in an organization where we thank our volunteers so profoundly and they thank us back equally, because the opportunity for them to get out and share their story also aids in their own recovery. And so their engagement with NAMI Metro is just as important as what they are teaching the community. It really helps with keeping themselves healthy as well.
If somebody's listening to this and they want to volunteer, what is the process that they have to go through to volunteer with NAMI Metropolitan Baltimore?
Yes, thank you for asking. And we are always, always recruiting more volunteers. So they would want to call us on our helpline. That number is 410 435-2600. They will be connected with our volunteer coordinator. That individual will then go through a process of filling out an application to let us know what their interests are. They then do an interview with our volunteer coordinator to find out a little more about our programs and specifically trying to match them up with a volunteer opportunity that is right for them. From there, depending on the program that they deem as of interest to them, there's a process that they might go through. They might go through a training process that is held here internally, or they might be sent to NAMI Maryland, which is our state office, for an in-person training, which could be 1 or 2 days. And that largely depends on the program that they choose, which route we take. From there, once they've passed that training program, we work individually with them to enact them in the community and to start scheduling them for volunteer opportunities.
I should mention, last year, NAMI Metropolitan Baltimore provided more than 9,500 touch points of service to people in the Baltimore metropolitan area. They are individuals living with mental health conditions, their family members and friends, and mental health professionals. What do those touch points of service look like, Carrie?
Sure. So those are, we have several different ways that we serve the community. We have both classes and support groups. Classes meaning that they have a scheduled start time and end time, most of which are an 8-week program, but it varies by class. So we have a peer-to-peer class, which helps those who are living with a mental health condition and helps with their recovery. And again, led by two individuals who are also living with a mental health condition. So that is an 8-week program. We have a family-to-family class, which is for family members who are caregiving with those with a mental health condition, which talks about crisis management. It talks about self-care, because what we know is that family members often are handling a lot at home, but also aren't caregiving for themselves first. And so a bit of that, put your oxygen mask on first before helping others.
Right.
We talk about self-care in those classes, and that is an 8-week program as well. And so those, again, are scheduled on a year-round basis, but on a very specific schedule with a start and end date. And then we have our support groups, which are year-round, and those are for peers. We have a support group for peers, for those who are living with a mental health condition, and a support group for family members or caregivers, those who are caregiving for someone with a mental health condition. And so those support groups happen on a regular basis, weekly or biweekly, depending on the location that you're looking for, again, led by facilitators who have that lived experience. And then in addition to that, we give several presentations out in the community. In Our Own Voice is a presentation that is led by two individuals who are living with a mental health condition, and it is largely a campaign to help break down the stigma associated with mental health conditions. And so, again, it kind of tells the story of what happened, what helped, and what's next for those two individuals who are living with a mental health condition. And we do those presentations on college campuses with companies, with other nonprofits, also in the inpatient setting in local hospitals, again, to help individuals who may be in the inpatient unit see someone who has been there and who is now on the other side of that. So largely a lot of presentations out in the community. We have several other presentations that we do, including stigma-free in the workplace, as well as Virtual Voices, which is a program, an interactive program that we do to help really understand what it would be like to live with auditory hallucinations. We do Virtual Voices as well as the In Our Own Voice program with the Baltimore City Police Department. And then we do In Our Own Voice with the Baltimore County Police Department as part of their crisis intervention training as well. And so the Virtual Voices program, you actually wear a headset and do activities while listening to auditory hallucinations. Again, helping to bring some awareness and helping to break down that stigma. And we will do that presentation as requested, again, for companies, for schools, throughout the community, wherever it has been requested of us. And then we do school presentations as well. We have a program called Ending the Silence, which is is an audience intended for middle and high school students. We are open to do those presentations at any school that requests our presence. We're able to do it in three different formats. One is for the students themselves, one format for the teachers, any facilitators in the school, any teachers, any faculty, and then one presentation for parents. And so, again, those are led by those with lived experience. And it's, again, to be a conversation starter and help to normalize the conversation around mental health conditions. So those are just a few of our programs. And I feel like I could go on and on with those.
No, they're amazing.
We do a lot for the size organization that we are. We try to cover a lot of topics.
It's amazing. We've been talking to Carrie Graves, Executive Director of NAMI Metropolitan Baltimore. 1 in 5 adults experience a mental illness in a given year. Approximately 175,000 people in Baltimore City are living with a mental health condition. Let that sink in for 1 second. 175,000 people in our own city living with a mental health condition. 20% of children and adolescents aged 13 to 18 live with a mental health condition. 50% of lifetime cases of mental illness begin by age 14. That's crazy. Just wild. What is mental illness? How does it affect a person?
Sure. So, well, we all go through emotional ups and downs throughout our lives, but mental health conditions go beyond those emotional reactions. They are a medical condition that affects a person's thinking and feeling and mood. And I think what is really important for me to note here is that they are just like any other physical illness. And often I think we think of the head as separate from the body. And even in today's society, we treat a physical illness very differently than we do anything dealing with the brain. And it should not be so. They are an illness just like diabetes or asthma or hypertension and should be treated the same way. Mental illness can affect any gender, any race, any age, and everyone with each person with a mental health condition could have a different experience. Even someone with the same diagnosis, which also makes it hard for people to understand and also increases the importance of stigma-free campaigns, stigma-reducing campaigns, because so often things that we don't understand and things that are confusing to us are the things that we tend to stigmatize. And so what we do know is that with timely and effective treatment, the recovery is possible for all people living with a mental health condition. And so we need to encourage early treatment, effective treatment, and we need to reduce that stigma to allow people to access the treatment. So all
we
of those
are gonna,
things are really important.
We're going to take a short break, and I want to come back with you, Carrie Graves, Executive Director of NAMI Metropolitan Baltimore, and I want to talk more about stigma. Maryland Viewpoints will continue after this.
Wow, that's a lot of books. Little One at Home.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's see. Childproofing Your Home, Childproofing Your Yard, Childproofing Your In-Laws Home and Yard.
Of all the things you can read to keep your child safe, the most important is attached to their car seat. Read the instruction manual and use the latch system. It makes it easier to be sure your child's car seat is installed correctly. Learn more at safercar.gov. Anchor, tether, latch. The next generation of child safety. A message from the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Maryland Viewpoints. I'm your host, Meredith Marks, here with Carrie Graves, Executive Director, NAMI Metropolitan Baltimore. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and we were just talking about stigma. And this is such an important topic, Carrie, that I feel really needs to be pushed out in society, that so many things have a stigma surrounding them. And we need to break through this stigma barrier that's been put up and knock those stigma walls down. How do we do that?
It's hard, you know, but it really is. It really is a problem that we need to address. When you think about other health conditions, if I said to you that individuals living with cancer that only 43% of individuals living with cancer were getting treatment, that would surprise you, right?
Yes.
But that's the case with mental health conditions, is that approximately only 43% of adults with a mental health condition are receiving treatment each
year. Is that
year.
Solely because of stigma, or is that also maybe because in contribution of health care availability?
It can be both, right? This is certainly isn't all stigma related. It certainly can be health care related as well. We know that even though parity has gotten better with mental health and health care, it's still not on par as it is with other health conditions. And that is something advocacy related that we work on with NAMI. But we do know that stigma is a barrier, and is probably one of the easiest barriers to address if we just address it. And so really NAMI is trying to work throughout the community to raise the awareness and educate people, and educate especially workplaces and college campuses and universities on how to reduce stigma and active steps that they can take to reduce stigma.
What happens when an illness goes untreated?
When an illness goes untreated, it has significant consequences. The average delay right now between onset of symptoms and intervention is 8 to 10 years. So imagine having a health condition and waiting 8 to 10 years to get treatment. But that's what the average is right now. Depression is the leading cause of disability worldwide. It's expensive. Mental health conditions cost the U.S. economy $180 billion in lost earnings every year. That's a lot. And beyond that cost, for many of the families that are in Baltimore, a single psychiatric crisis or emergency will present challenges to the individual and family's financial stability and well-being. It can really have that ripple effect throughout the whole family. And again, you mentioned youth and that 50% of mental illness cases begin by age 14. Well, for over one-third of students with a mental health condition age 14 to 21 will drop out. It's the highest dropout rate of any disability group. So the consequences are severe when we don't treat mental health, and we can help that by reducing that stigma.
Can mental health issues come about later on in life from a traumatic situation? Not
Absolutely.
Just PTSD, but affecting a person as a whole?
Absolutely. We know that traumatic situations can certainly cause an onset of mental health conditions. And again, when those traumatic situations happen, it is important to get the individual the help and treatment that they need quickly, because all too often someone experiences trauma and then they don't get the help, again, for that 8 to 10 years before they seek treatment. And by then, those issues have compounded and they've gotten worse. And it can affect more than just your mental health. People living with mental health conditions face an increased risk of having other chronic medical conditions like diabetes and lung disease and heart disease. And so it is important to treat the person as a whole. It's important to make sure that you are addressing any physical symptoms along with mental health symptoms, and to really look at traumatic situations and again, get treatment as soon as possible.
Another age group that really faces this uphill battle of mental illness is college age students with college loans and the stress of classes and figuring out what they want to do. I understand that you have a very successful program for colleges and universities called I Will Listen. Can you tell me about the program and its importance?
Absolutely. You're exactly right. All of the stress of being away from home, from being away from the situations and the comfort of those around you that provide that support. And then, the anxiety that comes with those final exams and with being in that new environment. All of these things can lead to mental health conditions. And we also know that that falls right in that average diagnosis range as well, those college years. And so it's such a critical time to be addressing mental health issues. And we also know that on college campuses that the school resources are strapped, right? They don't have the level maybe of counseling services that they need to serve the number of students that they have. And so
right.
4 years ago, NAMI Metropolitan Baltimore adopted a program that was actually developed by NAMI New York City called I Will Listen. We started implementing it on college campuses in Baltimore City and County. In that first year, we started with just a handful, just three college campuses. And in this last year, we had 12. So we were on 12 college campuses in Baltimore City and County. It is a week-long campaign that takes place in October each year. And it is largely a campaign to get the students talking about mental health and talking to each other. We use campus media, social media, student group partners, and we implement a series of events that encourages talking and listening. We do in our own voice presentations, which I mentioned earlier, on each of the campuses. The students sign pledges that say that they will listen. We provide other educational opportunities. And then the schools get creative with it as well and plan their own events. So Towson University had a bonfire to burn stigma this year, and Goucher was making 1,000 cranes to signify hope for those who are living with a mental health condition. And we're proud to say that in this last year, in 2019, we reached over 2,300 students through that campaign. And so we only see it growing and becoming even more successful in the future.
So let's talk about stigma just for another second. Over to the workplace, a lot of people don't want to bring this up because they don't want to be judged within their workplace. What steps can companies take to ensure that they are stigma-free?
Yeah, absolutely. Workplace stigma is also a really big issue. And I should say, many employers feel that they are doing the right thing by implementing EAP programs and by making sure that they have health benefits that cover mental health, which is all very important. But if you aren't normalizing the conversation within the workplace, people with a mental health condition are still going to feel that they should not be talking about it, that there may be that there may be harassment, there may be lack of advancement opportunities or discrimination if they talk about it. They could even be dealing with mental health conditions within their family members and not themselves that they have a fear of talking about at work, because we know that it still isn't looked upon the same as a physical disability. And, you know, when someone has another health condition and they need to take a leave of absence to care for that, that is approved, and they come back to work and are welcomed back. Someone with a mental health condition saying, "I need to take a break, I need to take a leave to help with my mental health," coming back to work can be incredibly hard. They're going to fear, again, that there will be repercussions for that leave that they took. And so it is important, again, to educate those in the workplace to make sure that when you are talking about physical health, that you are talking about mental health as well. Companies can build social opportunities that really, again, break down barriers. The more comfortable that you make your employees with each other, the more likely they are that they are going to talk to each other about their mental health concerns. So creating that support system within the workplace and making sure that we aren't treating it as a moral failing that someone has a mental illness, and that we aren't saying things like, "Oh, just snap out of it," or you know, "You can turn your attitude around," because that's not what a mental health condition is. It goes deeper than that. And so a lot of it is education, and what we will be doing as NAMI Metro Baltimore this year is taking that program of I Will Listen for college campuses and now bringing it into the workplace. So we have a stigma-free presentation that we do in the workplace and have been doing for many years, which helps companies learn what some of the signs and symptoms of mental health conditions are, how to start conversations, and what some of the actions are they can take in the workplace. But bringing I Will Listen into the workplace will take it one step further. We will work with each company to develop a plan that can take place over a week or however long of time period they dictate that will help involve the leadership, mid-level management. It can be a series of presentations, a series of messages. We can bring in our volunteers to do in our own voice or virtual voices. And so really creating a campaign that breaks down those barriers. And we started thinking about this because what we're doing on college campuses is so impactful. But
right.
If students don't have a safe place to work after college when they graduate, then what good is that doing? And so we need to make sure that we're carrying that message through from stigma-free college campuses to stigma-free workplaces.
So in the workplace.
And that employers are,
yes.
Are also receiving the same education.
Absolutely. Carrie Graves, thank you so much, Executive Director of NAMI Metropolitan Baltimore. We're running out of time. I just wanted to mention Mental Health Forum on Suicide Prevention, February 12th, 6 to 7:30, Southeast Anchor Library, which is 3601 Eastern Avenue, Baltimore, and NAMI Walks, June 7th, Canton Waterfront Park. Registration is now open. You can go to namibaltimore.org. You can email info@namibaltimore.org. You can call the helpline 410-435-2600. And NAMI Metropolitan Baltimore is on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Carrie Graves, thank you so much for bringing this topic to light because this is really important. We appreciate having you on.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. This is Maryland Viewpoints, a presentation of the Maryland News Network heard on radio stations across Maryland. The views expressed in this program are not necessarily the views of radio station ownership, management, or advertisers. Join me again next time for Maryland Viewpoints. I'm Meredith Marks.